Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 24th. It's a somber Sunday morning, and with me, as always, is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Somber.
Yeah.
Somber, yeah.
Yep. We lost a dear friend and a legend this past week, but we will get through the show, and at the end, we will honor Wayne Grasek as only we can on this show.
Because we're the ones who do it. We're the only ones who can do it our way.
Right, that's true. And,
or Burger King.
Or Burger King's do it our way or do it your way. Before that, we've got an interview with Brandon Laird of Nippon Ham. We're going to talk about the Fighters, the PL League, and a little bit about the Central League. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right. I was able to go out to Tokyo Dome this week on Thursday because the Nippon Ham Fighters were hosting the Oryx Buffaloes. And they had a weird series. They played Tuesday and Thursday. They had a Tuesday game in Shizuoka. They had a Thursday game at Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, and, it was weird.
Yeah, but, you know, this is Japan, so we've seen that. We see that from time to time. And probably the Tokyo Dome had something going on Wednesday and they couldn't use it. And they probably had wanted to play one of those games in Tokyo too, but couldn't. This happens a lot.
Right. Scheduling conflicts. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So anyway, I got to talk to lots of people. It was good to go to the park. I hadn't been since, I haven't been to Tokyo Dome since the WBC, my little cameo there before Israel played the Netherlands in the second round. So anyway, I got the chance to talk to Brandon Laird, who for some reason I missed in spring training.
Missed?
Yeah, well,
Did you try to hit him with a fastball or a curve?
Well, that you don't have to say I missed when it comes to throwing a baseball, because we'll just assume that I'm going to miss. I missed him because I went to interview Shohei Ohtani, and the three foreigners I saw were Edwin and
Escobar.
Escobar. Boy, I'm going to get his name wrong every single time. I say Edwin Escobar, Chris Martin, and Luis Mendoza, and Brandon Laird just was not on the field. And he said, no, I was there. He was there. He was wearing
a trainer's uniform.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandon could have been there, although he might have been wearing Taishiota's uniform, which might have been too big for him. But
in the legs, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I you know, that's okay. Dig. High heat there, baby. Okay. So anyway, I got a chance to talk to Brandon, we got a chance to catch up and share his thoughts on, you know, what happens when you lose I guess the best way I put it was you lose a number of huge players.
Right.
And as the Fighters have. So let's hear what Brandon had to say. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Brandon Laird of the Nippon Ham Fighters. Welcome to the new season.
Thank you very much.
We're not accustomed to seeing the Fighters in last place. This is kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't think we are either, especially after how last year went.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all right. It's early. No need to panic. You just got to, you know, just play every day, you know, like it's a new day, and I think we'll be just fine.
Okay. So obviously, you know, you guys are missing a huge number of players, a number of huge players.
Yeah.
And now, how has the response been within the team?
I think we've handled it pretty well. You know, losing guys like, you know, Nakata and Ohtani are definitely a big hit to a team and definitely our lineup and stuff. But, you know, we have a lot of guys in Kamigaya that, you know, are young and have a lot of talent. And you know, I think they're going to step up. You know, some of them, it's their first time here, so they're probably a little nervous and adjusting. But I think over time, you know, they're going to do just fine.
Okay, who are some of the guys we need to look out for? Who are in the spotlight now? Who we may not be familiar with?
Absolutely, our second baseman Ishii.
Yeah.
You know, coming out of college, going straight to the MPB. He's done well. Plays good baseball, good defense, good hitter. You know, he's definitely in the spotlight, and another good hitter. Is Yoko.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a plays first, DH, outfield, a little versatile, and you know, he's got some power. So.
Okay, so we'll be looking out for those guys. And obviously you guys have a lot of competition at catcher, and I'm seeing a lot of performance out of those guys.
They've been doing well. You know, we have three here now, Shimizu, Shota, and Ichikawa.
Right.
And, I mean, they're all great catchers, you know, play great defense, and, you know, they can all hit, have some power. So, you know, whenever each one gets in there, they've been doing really good.
It's obviously a big opportunity for those guys now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they work hard, and, you know, they pick up each other, and, you know, they cheer for each other, and, you know, I feel like that gives them a lot of confidence. So.
Now, it wasn't so long ago that you were in their position, looking for a job, looking for a breakthrough, and, you know, in the U.S., and obviously maybe you had to come to Japan to get the chance, but you've been in their shoes before.
I have, plenty of times, but, you know, you just got to be patient. I was patient. I just controlled what I can control, and that was, you know, just hitting and playing good defense, and an opportunity opened up over Japan and took advantage of it, and I mean, I couldn't be happier.
Well, sometimes when you were in their shoes, were you less patient?
Yeah, definitely, and you definitely see guys that are getting called up to the majors that, you know, you feel like you're better than, and, you know, why are they getting an opportunity, why am I not? You know, but, you know, it's frustrating, but you got to just stay, you know, like, be yourself and just control what you can control, and, you know, good things happen.
Yeah, don't let those dark thoughts take over.
Definitely. And I mean, they easily could, but, you know, you just got to stay strong and not let it.
Okay, well, like the season, you guys, you know, have plenty of reason to panic, but no panic yet.
No, definitely not. We're a good team. Okay. I mean, obviously, it showed last year.
Mm.
And we overcame some injuries last year, and we ended up winning the Nippon Series. So, I mean, it's April, what, 20th?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely early. I think we'll be just fine.
Yeah, John says he doesn't look at the standings, but he looks at them every day. But what he means is he doesn't care about the standings. And obviously, there's no point, no worries about that until the last day of the season, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at the standings, like you said, until the end of the season. It's a long time. It's about, what, 5 months away, so
right.
It's a lot of baseball to be played.
Now, we talked before about your preparations and whether they've changed from year to year, and you said basically no, but this year you had something a little different. You were coming off the Japan Series, but you also had the WBC. Now, tell me a little bit about the WBC. Did it change your preparation at all, or just tell me about that experience?
It was a great experience. Definitely glad I took the opportunity to do it. You know, I get to represent, you know, half my heritage and my mother's side.
Okay.
You know, that was pretty cool. And to get a chance to say I played in the WBC, you know, it could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But, I mean, I just, no different preparation. I just the same game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've played in the States before. You know, I know I've been in Japan the last 3 years, but I was just same mindset, same approach, and I just wanted to make sure I enjoyed myself and enjoyed it. And I definitely did, and, you know, it was fun.
Were the fans kind of curious about the sushi pose after the home run?
I don't know. I don't think they knew what was going on. But, you know, Cruz was doing it, and I was excited, and they just, you know, I did it, so it was fun.
Okay, was it the first – have you played in winter ball in Mexico at all?
I have not. Never played winter ball.
So you never played in Mexico?
No, never.
Wow. So that must have been time. That must have been exciting. Was your mom there or anything?
No, family didn't go. My wife was.
Oh, okay.
They were watching it on TV, all my family and friends. But yeah, it was exciting. It was loud. The atmosphere was great, and you know, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, now a little bit about this season. Obviously, we've seen, you know, this kind of a first the beginning of the the preseason and the exhibition games, and you get to see a lot of new players, and you see how teams have changed, coming out looking a little, you know, different looks. What kind of things have you observed this year? About the league, or about the, I guess about the league mostly, about other teams and such. I know, well, you're focused on your game, but
yeah, I feel like, you know, like even like observe like the Eagles. I mean, they're a hot team right now.
They're playing hard.
They're, you know, they got a good pit. They got Hishi now in their starting rotation with Norimoto, and you know, they got good hitters in the middle of the lineup. You know, Amador and Wheeler and Peguero. I mean, he's on fire.
Yeah.
So, and it's also like, I mean, you look at the standings now, it's like the three teams that were in last year are the top, and the three teams that are in the playoffs are in the bottom. But, you know, definitely the Eagles, you know, there's something to keep your eye on.
Yeah, they've been hard to beat. I mean, it took the Lions 12 innings to beat them last night. And Mogi had another leadoff home run. And
he's a good kid, man. I enjoy watching Mogi play. Not only defense, but hitting.
Mm.
His approach, I mean, he stays on the ball so well, and he's a special player.
He had a rookie of the year last year, and this year he's like another level above so far.
I think I mean, he's got a long career ahead of him. I think he's going to win MVP or if not multiple, so yeah. he's that talented.
Well, he came out a little late to NPB. I think he's in his mid-20s, okay. sort of about the time you got here, yeah. so you can comprehend that.
Yeah, definitely. So. But yeah, like I said, they're a good team, the Eagles, and I mean, it shows by the record.
Okay. Norix has also been a kind of a nice surprise for their fans, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Especially after, you know, last year how it turned out, but I mean, same team, but you know, it's just a new year. You know, they started fresh, and they got some. You know, they got Kaneko back healthy, and
sure.
You know, Dixon's always good, and now they got Phil Koch, and Romero's having a good year so far.
Well, yeah.
So he brings the power of that lineup, and I feel like Tio Okada's swinging the bat well. So yeah, they're a good team.
Indeed. Yeah. So it's gonna be a fun season for the fans. Tough one for you guys, a fun one for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you want. You know, you want everybody to have a good team and be right there in the hunt. That's what you play for: excitement. You know, when you're 20, 30 games out, you know, it's kind of like, doesn't get fun, you know. So if everybody can just be tight and just, it'd be a fun year for the fans.
Well, last year, guys, you guys were 11 and a half out. How fun was that?
That was fun. that was fun. I remember when we went on that winning streak last year. I mean, that was one fun ride. You know, everybody's attitude was just so positive. We come to the field, it's fun every day. And, you know, we were just having fun and being kids playing the game that we love. And, you know, it was showing.
Is there any of that holdover? I know last year is last year, and it's done. And what's done is done. But that memory of what you guys are capable of doing, is that keep you help keep the spirits up now, or is that not necessary? It's just history.
No, I feel like you definitely think about it. You know, it wasn't too long ago, and it's going to be a memory that you're always going to remember. You know, that's what you play for. And some of the guys that are here, it's their first year here, mm-hmm. and. You can only explain to them the excitement that you feel playing in the World Series, and you know how cool it is and the experience. So, you know, you definitely feed off that.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much for being our guest for the nth number of times.
And, oh, no problem.
Yeah, and good luck and good health.
Thank you.
You okay?
All right. Thanks, Brandon. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Thank you very much, Brandon. And I've actually already spoken with him this year.
Yeah.
On my trip up to Hokkaido, I got to sit down and berate him because I sent him an email congratulating the fighters after they won the Japan series,
mm-hmm.
and that email remains out there unresponded to in the ethers.
You could have sent it to me then, and then I'm the one who didn't answer because that would be normal.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes you're sometimes on short what do they call it, SMS here in Japan. I will send a note to Jim, and it'll be more than 24 hours before he gets back to me.
But, yeah, John's calling the police. You know, he's going like, you know, missing persons.
I'm about to, because I tell Jim I'm like his man wife,
and I like my mom.
When he doesn't respond, I start to panic and think something's wrong. Something has happened.
Yeah, what am I gonna do? Go break a leg or something? Well, anyway, so getting back on a crooked note, what caught your ear?
Well, I love you, Brandon, and you make foreigners look good with your ability to eat sushi. For me,
well fish. No, that's just you.
Well, and other seafood, I'm sure it's not just limited to sushi, because if you go to some of those restaurants, they give you a lot of things that I wouldn't consider food. And okay. You know, my philosophy has always been fish are pets, not food. So when I saw Finding Nemo and they said fish are friends, not food, I thought this is the greatest movie ever. But getting back on track here, he said he doesn't look at the standings. Then he pointed out how the standings are flip-flopped this year with the usual top three and the bottom three at the moment, or at the time they were.
I wanted to mention what occurred to me as I was berating you last week. It's not that you don't look at the standing, it's that you don't care about the standings. You
exactly.
Don't, okay. Yeah. Because, yeah. Okay.
And I look at, what I see now is that a couple of teams are flirting with, well, actually the Fighters have fallen 11 games under 500.
Flirt.
And the Marines are approaching 10 games under 500. And as bad as the Dragons have been, they're not that far under 500 yet. They're close. They're close, but they're not that far. So, I mean, it's they're in a bad way right now. And you know, Brandon made some excellent points about the young players.
Mm-hmm.
Who are coming up and contributing. Yep. And I thought that was obviously they're contributing, but not like last year. And that was the thing that I pointed out in the prediction show for the Pacific League. I said every guy they brought up and put in, plugged in to fill a hole, to fill a need, that guy produced. And while these guys are not, it's not that they're not producing, it's just that when you're missing a guy like Shohei Ohtani, that's, and I always say this on the show, and I know some listeners are going to bring this up. It's just one guy. You know, when one player goes out of the lineup, that shouldn't, if you're missing one guy and you can't win or continue the winning, then you weren't a good team in the first place.
Yeah.
Something else was going on. But when you're missing a Shohei Ohtani and a guy in the middle of the lineup, as much as I berate Sho Nakata for not being a great hitter, he is a productive hitter in that he drives in runs.
Yeah, that is true. And also, he's... as you like to point out, you know, he's a guy they do depend on. They lean a lot on him, and whether he produces or not is another matter, but you can't lean on him when he's not there. You can lean on him and berate him, but when he's not there, it means, whoa, you know, there's, you know, the guy we hoped would be good isn't even here to be bad. And, of course, they have gotten, you know, they've gotten tremendous start from Kensuke Kondo. And
yes, the guy I said should snap out of it has.
Yeah,
he snapped completely out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they're getting some performance, but really what we're seeing is that the starting pitching, which was last year the magic key, you know, every guy they brought up from the farm team looked like, you know, they were playing in a different farm league. You know, it's like they were playing in the majors instead of the minors.
Right. Right.
And. So, and they just came in and blew away the league while Ohtani was polishing his hitting.
Right. And so one thing I noticed about some of these young guys, though, Kazunari Ishii is one of them, is when they're allowed to bat, it seems like they're doing okay. They're doing an adequate job at replacement level. But it's the little things. Like, I always talk about this with guys who come over from the States. And in the States, we have this phrase, get them on, get them over, get them in.
Mm-hmm.
And that just means get a guy, you know, however he gets on base, try to move him over to the next base and try to get him home.
Well, typically they do try, Japan excels at moving guys to the next base. Because if nothing else, that's, you know, at the end of the game when they lose, they can say, well, we lost, but we really tried to move the runners over.
Right, right. And Japan does, you said, excels at that. And I think in the States, we talk about that, but we don't actually hit behind the runner, or we don't actually try to go to right field so much. The guys are up there doing what they're
in Japan, they do it.
But in Japan, so this is where these guys are not excelling. They're not moving the guys over. They're not getting the bunts down. They're not doing the little things. And that's those little hidden mistakes, like, if you want to call them that, or just failures to come through. Mm-hmm. Are what's costing the Fighters at some points. Not every night, but at some points. Yeah.
But you know, I've did this the last 2 years. You know, when I collect my numbers every day, I began looking at, you know, when do teams bunt and how effective is it, and I found a quirk in the data 2 years ago. Now it was a mistake in the data. It was a mistake in my data was not a clean data set. Meaning that a lot of things that the data was in the process of getting from where it was raw to where it was usable, errors creeped in, and I got some unusual readings. But to some degree, those have survived into the current clean data set, although they were wildly exaggerated. And now what I'm going to say is, I came up with a sort of a conundrum, in which teams that bunted won more than teams that didn't. Now, that's not normal. If you take two teams and two teams with a runner on first base in the first inning and no outs, generally, the team that sacrifices with the number two guy is not going to win as often as the team that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in Japan, almost everybody bunts. However, given what I found was the teams that failed to bunt in Japan win less. And my theory, my pseudoscience theory is that because bunting and moving the runner over is seen as such a crucial part of the offense, it's seen as a you know, it's important, but they see it as sort of life and death.
Yeah, you say crucial, I say critical.
Yeah, critical. That failure to do so is the worst thing that can happen. Not having the guy bunt is okay if it's part of the plan, but if you try to bunt and the guy doesn't get the runner over, then the team tends to lose more than they should in Japan.
Hmm.
Even though teams that don't bunt will tend to be very successful.
Right.
And even, you know, because for a variety of reasons, teams that don't bunt are successful, but teams that fail to bunt, you know, where the guy pops up a bunt or the guy strikes out, where I have records of that he was trying to bunt like a third strike, a bunted third foul.
Mm-hmm.
Those outs tend to be extremely costly in Japan. When it's really not, you know, the cost of having a guy at first and second is not that big. But that out is like the worst out you can make in Japan, it seems.
Right. So funny. So when you purposely try to make an out,
and you do better.
You do better.
Than when you make an out that isn't the out you want, it crushes your team. Now it was an accidental discovery. I might not have noticed it in the clean data set, but it was exaggerated in the bad data set. And then when I went looking for it, I found it was still there to some degree.
Hmm.
So these teams that failure to execute is a killer in Japan.
Right. And so, I think they executed a lot when they went through, and you could hear it in Brandon's voice when he talked about that 15-game winning streak, I think mm-hmm. was, you could hear it in his voice about how excited they were about playing mm-hmm. every day, how much enthusiasm they had, how much the actual, I think when you get on a streak like that, especially when it gets to about 5 or 6 games, where all the pitchers have gone through, you've gone through the rotation one time and nobody has lost a game, that it picks up momentum. And I think you could sense that when he was talking about it, and it sounded really great. And again, that catapulted that team from, you know, as far back as 11 and a half games. It helped catapult that team to the playoffs,
they were way back. They were almost in fourth place.
And I talked about it, actually, yeah. I talked about it in fourth place.
Well that's fourth place in the Pacific League.
That's a dig at the standings thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No. That was a dig at the Pacific League because, you know, last year, the last couple of years, if you were in fourth place, it meant you were dead and buried.
Right.
Because only the teams in the top three, you know, in June were the only ones who were going to in pennant contention.
Right. So when I did that recent CBS interview, they asked me about the Fighters as a team, and I told them, well, you know what? They won the Japan Series last year, but I don't think that they were the best talent in Japan, and I don't think so this year either, and somehow that didn't make the cut. But anyway, I picked the Hawks to win the Pacific League, and they're having their struggles. They got their brains beaten out by the Eagles last night, but we'll get to that in a second. But I still think they have a lot of talent. It's not just about talent. It's about execution. It's about putting things together on the field, getting a rhythm and finding that. And I think once the Fighters do that, I think they're going to start winning more games.
I do too. I mean, I have a lot of confidence. As much as I'm not a fan of Mr. Kuriyama's devotion to the sacrifice bunt, and here's the thing is his luck with the sacrifice, as I said on Twitter, has been almost bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
He's you know, the Fighters are the team that when they bunt, you know, as I said, usually if you bunt, you lose. All things being equal, the team that bunts in a given situation, except a one-run situation where they can win, is going to lose more than the team that doesn't.
Right.
But the Fighters are the opposite. The Fighters, when they bunt, when they execute, when the Fighters execute, they win. But that being said, that is probably a lot of that is just luck. And last year it worked because when your pitching is good, you know, this is the Trey Hillman thing. you know, Trey and I have had this, you know, he was pushing the buttons when he was managing the fighters to their two pennants.
Right.
And I wasn't. But I looked at it and I said, look, you know, you were winning because you were executing and your pitching was good. And he was saying, no, we were bunting because our pitching was good.
Right, right. I heard him talk about that aspect. He said there was no reason for us, I think it was his first year, reason for us to play for one run because we didn't feel like we could hold the lead.
That is correct.
And so if we're playing for a run, it means that we think we have the defense and the pitching to sneak out of there with a win.
Well, they had three things. They had defense, they had pitching, they had Sapporo Dome, which was going to limit the number of times opponents were going to be able to score four runs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything worked in that area, and I think that was his plan. But the fact is, it also worked the other way, is that because they did execute, and, you know, the other part is the mental part, which he did agree about. And he thought it was really essential in spring training. And Bob Whiting has come out and said, Trey has talked about this like it was Trey's talked about it as if it was like a team consensual. In the end, it was a consensual decision, you know, that we're going to go back and practice more and bunt more. In 2006.
Right.
And Bob Whiting has come out and said, yeah, it was a consent. It was like when the Kintetsu Buffaloes agreed to let Hideo Nomo pitch in the majors. It was a consensus decision after they had no choice.
Right.
Hashtag high heat.
So basically the fighters said, this is what we're going to do this year. And you're going to do it.
And yeah,
that's,
do it.
Well, that's one line of it. And Trey, being Trey, I'm sure studied their opinion and talked to the players and said, okay, if this is the direction we're going to go, I'm all in.
Okay.
Because Trey's that kind of guy. He wants to be everybody be on the same page and to be organized and then, you know, and then he was accountable for that. So
right.
Anyway, moving on. The fighters are not executing yet.
Talking about them. So injuries definitely are impacting the offense and the pitching. And, you know, we talked about Ohtani being out. We talked about Nakata, and he and Taishi Ota are supposed to be back today on Sunday.
Okay, so we'll actually get to see Brandon Laird and Taishi Ota on the field, so we'll know they're not twins.
Okay.
We'll know that they're not the same person.
And I haven't really heard anything about the comic book character Ohtani.
I love that comment because it was so good on multiple levels.
Okay, but I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you liked it. But that's a twin killing when you lose a guy who is impacting the front end of your rotation and the middle of your lineup. That's a double whammy.
Okay, one of the bloggers who's on my Twitter feed is Kazuto Yamasaki, and he said he calculated based on WAR, wins above replacement, that Ohtani was going to cost the fighters by not being able to pitch until the end of May not being able to pitch until the 1st of July, not being able to return to the lineup until the end of May. He was going to cost the fighters 7 wins. That's a huge number of wins. And I find that almost, I can't say it's unacceptable, but it's bizarre.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's 7 wins. That's provided they have nobody to replace his innings. And nobody,
right.
You know, it's like, yeah, 7 wins if they send 8 people to bat.
And he played a little bit. It's not like he's missing the entire first half, right?
Well, I think he was talking about that time from the, you know, from April 6th till when.
Right,
but,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is
still,
he played a few games. He played a
week.
Yeah,
but still.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe. Basically, when you play 143-game season, the difference between an MVP and the best guy you can get on the farm team to fill in ain't going to be 10 games over a season.
Right. So these guys being out, I don't think we mentioned the fact that Chris Martin is out as well. And,
oh, oh, I did see him the other day, but I didn't talk to him. But so he's out, but he's there, but he's not there. He's not available.
But maybe they'll be getting some of these guys back. Maybe they're wanting to get there, or they're going to rush some of these guys back. Let's hope not. But it's a mess when you've got a championship team, you know, already 11 games under 500 and just scuffling and not looking good. I don't think it's, I mean, there's no way you can lose, you could be down 11 games under 500 and look good.
Well,
but sometimes they have some games that are just not competitive.
Yeah, well, that is the pitching. I mean, usually if you see, people like to talk about the pitchers being the most important. And as I've said, pitchers more than win games, pitchers don't lose them.
Right.
They can lose the game faster than anybody on the field. You throw a bunch of cookies up there, your team ain't going to win.
Right.
So you may not be able to put the runs on the board. You may not be able to get the outs on the field. But if you don't execute decent pitches, it really doesn't matter what anybody else does on that day. So what I've seen, the starters have not been executing their pitches, and so the batters have been going like, oh, well, here we are. We're down by 5 runs again.
Right, right. We've got Hirotoshi Takanashi, who pitched well for them last year as a young guy. Takayuki Kato, mm-hmm. there's another rookie last year who pitched well.
Uwasawa, who was good a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he pitched I think it was Friday night at Sabre
right,
Dome.
And he did.
Got blasted. Yep.
Kohei Arihara got beat up again.
Arihara is the guy I've never been impressed with that guy.
Well, I don't think you have to say that because you said it last week.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, geez. I said it about Despaigne too, right? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, they look like they're in trouble, but I think they can get back on their feet.
Oh, I think so. I think they know what's going on and eventually. I don't know. You know, not going to push the panic button, but they're going to push the reset button.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Which is, look, calm down. The pennant race is not over. You know, every day the pennant races start, you know, somebody, Kuriyama's going to say, look, we're in this. We got to focus on what we're doing now. What we've done before is immaterial. And, you know, and okay, just we're going to execute and take it one day at a time. And things will start to play because they're not the bad team they've been playing as. So anyway, so I think they'll bounce out of it to some degree and they'll be competitive, at least for a playoff position this year.
Okay. Looking at the rest of the Pacific League as we transition seamlessly.
you say that, but you don't mean it.
Yes, I don't mean it. Obviously, the Eagles are off to their best start in club history. It's hands down. I said it after 10 games. It's still the same case. They're 12-4, so they're 8 games over 500. Doing well, and so are the Oryx Buffalo. So which one do you want to hit first?
Well, let's go with the Eagles because when
let's fly with the Eagles, he says.
fly like an eagle, Steve Miller.
You are confusing some of our young listeners. 77 was that?
Okay, I'll put a Band-Aid on it or something. Okay, since I asked him, and when I asked about the teams, and I mentioned the Eagles, Brandon Laird's eyes lit up, but I think he's still under the Oryx fix, which is if you mention Oryx, you're supposed to scowl. He went like, oh yeah, they're okay too. So let's start with the Eagles. I'll just make some comments about yesterday's Eagles. We're taping Sunday morning, and I had a chance to review the Eagles-Hawks game, and a couple of things that were interesting. First of all, a shout out to one of our preseason questions on Kazuo Matsui's 200th home run.
Yeah, I think that was Glenn.
Glenn, yep. Okay. First of all, yeah, nice. Nothing to write home about. He was behind in the count, and somebody threw a fastball that was, you know, threw him a batting practice fastball. But he put it into the permanent seats at Fukuoka Dome, opposite field. So that was a bad pitch, but a really nice swing.
A big boy home run, yeah.
It was indeed. But here's the thing: the Hawks have been, and I'm going to segue into the Hawks briefly because that's part of the context. The Hawks are struggling with their starting pitching because they've got a fighter's issue going on. Every starting pitcher is getting hurt.
Right.
And basically it's just, Kodai Senga, and then, you know, the cast of Gilligan's Island out there.
Yahtzee. Just like, shake the thing and throw it out and see who's exactly. up next. Yeah.
Well, last night it was Kenji Otonari, who I love, and he has been basically hurt much of his career, and he pitched three good games on the farm. He came up, and his command actually looked okay. His pitches themselves looked good. His control was off. They were not hitting their spots, but they had mm-hmm. nice movement on them until he fell behind and had to throw some cookies. But he lost his concentration a bit. Yeah, he looked shaky at the start. He fell behind all the hitters, and then he got in trouble. He was down by three runs, and then for I don't know why he looked stunned when they called for a low inside pitch to Yafet Amador, who was behind in the count, and they're stunned when he golfed it over the left field fence, you know, into the home run terrace. I mean, this is always shocks me. Why do people get surprised when people hit home runs on low inside pitches? You know, it's like, it's a hello. But what happened was the pitch was not inside enough. That pitch has got to be inside out of the zone. You know,
right.
It's got to be, you know, in towards the front of the shins to make that guy look at it but not swing. And it was over the white part of the plate, which is what you don't want. But he looked at it like, you're not supposed to hit a home run on that pitch. I'm saying, you know, how long have you been a professional baseball player, son?
Yeah, yeah. And there were five home runs. It seemed like every other inning I looked up and then there was a Hawks outfielder searching the skyline for a ball, you know?
I know. It's like, well, my first thought when I got into that game last night and I saw that Igor Omogi had not homered to open the game, I think that's kind of a moral victory, you know.
Yeah, he only visitors. Good.
yeah, it hit the base of the wall on the hop, you know. It bounded on the warning track, so that's they held him to a leadoff double. That's sort of like, yeah, we got a chance to win this game because the guy's just on fire. Great approaches. What I've seen from the Eagles this year, every time I watch them play, is they're making people throw strikes. They're the opposite. They're sort of the opposite of the DNA Bay Stars. Alex Ramirez's theory is we're going to go after the first strike because it's the best pitch you're going to see. But these guys are, you know, taking that the next step.
Right, and like we talked about last week. It's not just the foreigners who are getting the job done. It's the guys like Mogi. You talked about Igor Omori. One of the guys I really have always liked since 2013, and I saw his swing the first time, was Hiroaki Shimauchi, and he was one of the guys.
Yep.
He was one of the guys who hit a home run last night as well.
He did indeed. Genji Akami Nye's having a great year, and he's having an all-round season. As I mentioned, his base running last week was just...
Well, season, that's not... I mean, it's... Slow down. It hasn't even been a month.
He's having
for
the past
3.5 weeks.
Okay. Well, what I've seen, and I'm really keen to talk to. The other thing is the way the batteries have worked.
Mm.
When you get these games, what I see is really sticking. Well, first of all, the pitchers are executing, and that with Manabu Mima, that was so obvious last night. His command and control was very sharp, and the other thing is. They worked the counts really well when they were attacking the hitters, and what I see is this pattern of really good, solid approaches, good work, playing hard, good approaches. These guys are really prepared. I mean, prepared with a capital P. These guys are, and I really want to. What I want to talk to Yoda, the pitching coach, and to Nashida about this. Now, Nashida, I know, will give me a vague answer in which the truth is buried in there somewhere, and he doesn't like to give it out.
Right.
He'll go like, "Oh yeah, you know, we made sure their shoes are tied properly or something." But I what I see with the Eagles is a real careful plan after last year's debacle was that he and the coaching staff prepared plans for the players. You know, this is what you're doing right. This is what you can do. These are some options. We want you to work on this. We want you to work on that. And, you know, and try it out. See if this works. Because it's like every player who goes into those Eagles games wearing their uniform has an A plan, a backup plan, a C plan for when nothing's working, because these guys are ready. It's like, what can you do to get past these guys? Nothing. They're ready for everything.
Yeah, they seem to be able to make adjustments during at bats and everything, but more than anything, they're just whacking the cover off the ball.
Yep.
And maybe that goes to the preparation, but
I think it does to some degree. But the physically prepared and mentally prepared, yeah.
Right. It's the execution too. Whatever their plan is, they're making it work in the games. So the other teams are going to have to, including and especially the teams that think that they have a chance to get to the postseason, they're going to have to make some adjustments and get back into this thing.
Well, I think they have, caught some breaks. And I think, when you look at their record, some of what I see is, hitting the ball, finding gaps. I mean, like, Mogi's leadoff double last night was okay. It was basically a single. That's a double because it hit the gap.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
If it, 10, 15 feet to the left, 15 feet to the right, it's a single. But
right. But
I've seen a lot of that with the Eagles. But what, they've exploited that really well. So more power to them.
Okay.
So Oryx Buffaloes.
Another surprise here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good. I like that. I tried to figure out which team was going to be, and it's not that I hate the Buffaloes. I think it's the opposite. I really like the talent. I look at what they had put together, and I said, these players can play. How come the performance is so bad?
Yeah.
And so to see them to see them as individuals come out and perform and then win as a unit is really what I expected last year and the year before.
Right.
Because these are basically the same guys. Yep. They added. I think I said last week they added a few, maybe key players here and there. But it's basically the same rotation with an extra guy and Phil Koch. It's the same in terms of the lineup and the players on the field, except Stefan Romero is there now. Although he banged his knee into the wall yesterday and came out of the game, and no structural damage is the report that I saw this morning.
Sounds like the stadium's okay.
The stadium's going to be all right. The wall will not have to be replaced, nor will his knee. But
okay.
They had foreigners last year as well. Maybe they weren't as productive as early, and we have to see how this goes with him, but he has been productive. But it's basically the same group of guys. They're just performing now.
That is true. As for the new foreigners last year, they were not successful, period. But, one of my colleagues who was the Oryx beat reporter, after they had their big year in 2014, she had the misfortune of covering the Buffaloes for 2 years.
Yeah.
And basically, this is something the Buffaloes know. Every player who came to the Buffaloes from another team played worse. Every player who left the Buffaloes for another team played better. I'm not kidding. Young players did not develop. They'd have one good season. So Taguchi told me in 2015 when they were struggling. And he said, look, these guys are not playing with any enthusiasm. They lack concentration in the field. We saw that. Players make a blow. Good players, good fielders, making silly mistakes in the field. Just really obvious, painful ones. And once you got a job with the Oryx Buffaloes, it was time to chill. And
yeah, they don't care about winning here.
Well, that's the other part of it. Now, I asked Eiichi Koyano about this the other day, and I asked about the front office. I said, was it an issue? And he kind of he didn't want to talk about it, but he said, yeah, the atmosphere is different.
Mm.
The atmosphere here is different, and as a team, we were, embarrassed by that, but the atmosphere is different. The Oryx Buffaloes players, when they would win a game last year, it might be sunny, but if they lost, there was a cloud.
It was mostly cloudy.
And it was mostly cloudy, right. So it was like, oh, they got down, but now when they lose, it's another day. you know, that's part of the game. But before it was like, oh, great, you know, who's going to go to the farm team because we lost yesterday?
Yeah, and he's one of the reasons. I mean, he's 36, but he's he's hitting almost 360 as we go into games today in 16 games, and he's getting on base like crazy. And
He's fit. Yeah, here's the other thing. Everybody's healthy. Brandon Dixon has been sharp. He's one of these guys who's sharp. At the beginning of last season, he was sharp. The last two seasons, he was sharp. He was dull. He was sharp. He was dull. He's been on pretty much.
Yeah, Hiroyuki Nakajima has been pretty much.
He's been healthy. Been productive. Yeah, he said he was. I talked to him. He said he was fit this year. Both he and Koyano said that they put a lot of pressure on themselves. You know, in 2015, the Oryx loaded up with lots of players. They were coming off a season in which they were less than a half a game from the pennant. Mm-hmm. And the pressure was a little too much. They put too much pressure on themselves, I should say. And then Chihiro Kaneko had a lousy, you know, was coming off shoulder surgery and never really quite came back that year. And he had another bad year last year. And this year he's been really sharp. So the Buffaloes are going, hey, our best pitcher is pitching. Everybody's healthy. This is a team that wants us to win. Well, okay, let's go play hard.
Yeah. I mean, they even got a two-homer game from Yuki Miyazaki.
Yeah, and this is a guy basically who's sitting around the farm team for the last 5 years. I think he's had 100 at-bats twice.
He's a guy, I like to call him an elevator guy, because he just goes up, and then when they don't need him anymore, he goes down, and then they need him again, and he comes up. And
I wonder if his walk-up music is elevator music. I haven't listened yet. But
yikes.
Okay, and the other thing I want to mention is, according to some report yesterday, Oryx has won seven straight road games this season for the first time in franchise history. I don't know how valid that is. I have to go back and check, you know, records.
When I saw that, I'm thinking, that is that the Oryx Blue Wave franchise history?
The Honkyu Braves.
We've got two.
We've got two Oryx franchises and Honkyu. And the other thing I've noticed is that I kind of opened my little toolbox file. I don't open it a lot because it's really big in my database, and it just breaks down all these little weird numbers that I collect.
Uh-huh.
And I found out the Buffaloes are back to playing pretty good defense. The Buffaloes opposing teams against the Buffaloes are reaching base on a ball in play.
Uh-huh.
275. Now, 275, to give you an idea, that is second best in the Pacific League. It's second best in NPB. The Central League is not a good place for balls in play. You know, it's if you go out, they're getting hit, they're staying hit. But the Pacific League is a lot better, and the Buffaloes are just a hair short of best in the Pacific League. Okay, which leads us to number two is who's better than the Oryx Buffaloes, and who's playing the best defense in the Pacific League? And here's the hint. This is what they came into the season trying to do.
My first inclination is to say the Lions.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Same Lions. They've done their homework.
Yeah, and the reason I mean, obviously the errors are far and few between, few and far between, compared to last year. But they're making some plays. You know, they're taking some balls that are iffy or 50-50, and they're making them into outs. And so you don't look at the errors. Don't worry so much about the errors, even though some of the news outlets are making a big deal about the fact that they're not making so many. And when Sosuke Genda made an error the other day, they say, oh my gosh, that's his first error, but I guess he is human. And I'm like, of course he's human. What did you think he was?
Yeah, they were already, some of these guys were they preparing DNA checks, you know, or what? He's got alien DNA.
But yeah, but that's good.
But he can sure play short. Great.
But they're making some balls that they're catching a lot of balls that they didn't seem to just make plays on last year, and they're making good throws. And especially on the infield. The outfield, I'm still not sold on Akiyama being a great center fielder, but he's you know, he hasn't changed.
Okay. Now the other observation I want to make as far as the Pacific League goes is kind of like, you know, how you perform when you hit the put the ball in play is very random. You know, as I mentioned, one of the things we probably will not see less of from the Eagles, and I think to some degree their success so far has been in finding holes.
Mm-hmm.
The Buffaloes to some degree also, but the team that has not been able to buy a hit in the Pacific League has been the other disappointment is the Lotte Marines. Their team on base, and this is their on base percentage. This counts when the other teams make errors.
Right.
When they get the batter is safe on a fielder's choice, whatever, you name it. If you put the ball in play and you're on first base, this is what I'm counting. And the Marines are 249.
Ooh.
249. Okay, it's unbelievable. So Marines fans, I want you to take heart because this is not going to last.
Those
guys are hitting the ball much better than their numbers, and if you watch the games, you know it. So the Marines are not going to just lie down and take it the rest of the season.
Okay. All right, now making a four-seam transition, we'll talk about the Central League real quick, and then we got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But Takashi Toritani of the Hanshin Tigers surpassed his manager in a consecutive game streak, and that was on Wednesday. And he played in his 1,700th and 67th consecutive game. That
makes him
second on the list.
Yep.
And he is behind
Sachio Kinugasa. Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame third baseman, first baseman, and originally a catcher, Sachio Kinugasa.
That's right. And do you remember what the number is of Kinugasa?
No.
The number is 2,215 consecutive games played. So if Toritani wants to break that record, he would have to play every game until the year 2020 and about May.
Okay, which would make him not older than Manny Ramirez is now.
Manny Ramirez, who's playing in the Independent League.
Yeah, and we can't say he's not hitting because he's not playing very much. Six game. Well, they don't play a lot of games anyway. They're basically weekend games, and he's played six games he's played about half his team's games. Not surprised that Sports Nippon, Tokyo Sports was reporting that the Dragons are showing some interest. Well, again, not surprised there. I've been thinking about what team, when I did a Manny Ramirez story the other day, I was thinking about what team in NPB would take a chance on him.
Yeah, Dragons, they're out on the street corners begging for offense. But anyway.
Okay.
I read a quote. It was from Tadahito Iguchi of the Lotte Marines, and he said about Toritani of his streak. He says, he has a high threshold for pain, and he doesn't get injured. And the first thing I thought is, that doesn't make sense, when I heard the quote, when I read it. And, you know, you're reading the Japanese, and you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. Wait a second. But, because it seems like it's a contradiction. But then I thought, okay, well, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured, and...
Right, playing hurt and playing injured is two different things.
Exactly. And so you can play, you know, he hasn't had a separated shoulder, for instance.
Right.
He might have had a sprained ankle or sore this or sore that.
Yeah.
But you can play through that stuff. It's difficult at shortstop with a sore shoulder and all that. But I think he has been, he's been a great player for a long time. So,
oh yeah,
and he's back to hitting now. His defense at third base leaves a lot to be desired. And when he broke the record that night on Wednesday, he also had a fumble, or they ruled it an error. I don't know. That's a tough one because he did drop it, but I think there was a play earlier in that game where there was a double past him that maybe a better third baseman would have gotten. I didn't think it was that hard, hit that hard. But you know, he's having his defensive adjustment period at third base, and I think it's going to continue for a while. But I think he's going to get better.
Yeah, I think so too, because he's a really smart player. I've always loved his ability to adjust at the plate. He did a good job adjusting to the fact that his knees no longer wanted to move,
right,
and play shortstop as well as he did. I mean, he was bad, but he played well enough to fool Hunching into thinking he could play for several years.
Hashtag high heat.
So I think he can do. I know it's very hard for a lot of shortstops. It's very hard to move to third base when against right-handed hitters. Because you don't see the ball, and
right.
It gets to you more quickly.
Right.
That's an adjustment they have to get used to.
Now, 2 days later on Thursday, he passed Kinugasa for 21st place on the all-time list in walks with 932.
Mm. Now, that doesn't surprise me because he's a guy who, I think, for about a 6 or 7 year stretch, I think for about 7 years of his career, he was either first or second in walks in the Central League.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't checked, but he's probably led the league in walks about 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, so he drew walk number 932 in his career.
Wow,
he only took 14 seasons to get to that figure. Kinugasa played for 23 years.
Well, the other thing is that he did it in 14 seasons, but since Toritani has been playing, the seasons have been longer.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
About 9 to 10% longer. So yeah. He's got that going for him too.
So, and the all-time leader in walks is Sadaharu Oh with 2,930. So I don't think he's going to catch that.
No. I thought he's not going to catch a walk, and despite the fact that O's like 78 years old now, he still won't walk up to him.
Right. But the Tigers are winning games. They're not looking bad. They had a decent week, although they lost a couple games to the Dragons. But
having said that, they're not looking bad. But, you know, going back to my numbers, and talking about, you know, teams that are good about, you know, turning batted balls into outs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say that and the Tigers in the same breath. You know, John likes to, or I shouldn't say you like to talk. Nobody likes to talk about bad defense, you know, unless you're just out there being mean. But he has pointed out his frustrations with the Tigers defense. And right now, if you put the ball in play against the Tigers, you've basically got a 38% chance of reaching base.
Wow. But yeah, that's, given that they're over 500 and mm-hmm. they're pitching well, and they don't look as bad as the defense might suggest they should be.
No, you know, they've the other thing is the Tigers have also got a little they've done very well considering they faced very good starting pitching this year.
Yep.
And the last thing I want to say about the Central League is I have a sleeper alarm. I'm going to call this the 2006 Nippon Ham Fighters sleeper alarm, because they started the season playing well but winning poorly.
Uh-huh.
You know, doing poorly in the standings but playing well. And it's the Yakult Swallows. Has anybody noticed that they're leading the league in ERA?
No.
Okay.
I just noticed that David Buchanan is pitching great.
Yep.
Masanori Ishikawa is pitching great.
Right now, you know, and this goes for Oryx, and this goes for Cebu, and it also goes for Yakult. Really, really good defense. Then this is the snap out of it. This is what you can snap out of. You know,
yes.
So much of you know, the there's a lot of dumb things people say in baseball, just because, well, we're baseball guys, and you know, we tend to say dumb things a lot. But one of them is defense doesn't go into slumps. Well, it does, but the Yakult Swallows last year they came off one of the team's best defensive seasons in years, and they won a pennant. And then last year they went back to being literally bad at it again, and they finished fifth. And this year they're playing good defense again, so good sign for that. Here's another one. As I mentioned, that the Tigers have faced very tough starting pitching. Nobody in Japan has faced tougher starting pitching than the Swallows. So they're playing good defense, and they're getting basically zero offense from Tetsuto Yamada, which I don't see improving. I don't think that's a fluke right now.
Well, it's going to improve at some point, but
it's going to improve right now. But basically, he's hitting like he has since since August. So I haven't seen him go, you know, get back to where he was. But they should be better. So they're sort of my spoiler alarm is the Swallows have a chance to really be in it despite their really rotten start.
Yeah. Okay. And one other note: the Dragons have set a club record for futility by starting pitchers, I guess you could call it. They still have not registered a victory in 19 games. That's the second longest in NPB history, according to the TBS site. Now there's another site that said that they have surpassed the record. So anyway, there's starting pitchers haven't gotten wins, and it's not really futility by the starting pitchers because they've basically been pretty good. It's just been they haven't scored enough runs to make any of the starting pitchers a winner in the game.
Right. Yeah.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, we're going to hit this real quick, and then we're going to move on here and close it up. But at Stuart Miller asked us a question via Twitter, and he said, do you think NPB would ever make a TV network like the MLB network, and do you think it would be profitable? Hashtag high heat.
Go ahead, John, because I have an answer. You want me to go first?
Okay, well, we actually approached, I think it was the Pacific League about this when we heard about Pauleague TV coming around. This was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there are layers to the TV rights and the team's rights, and it's not simple, to put it, to not make it confusing. It is not simple. There are local TV rights, team rights. It's an amalgamation or a cornucopia of huge players, and I don't see that getting solved in the next couple of years. Although, maybe they could all come together and say, "Look at this at-bat app and what it's doing with MLB. We've got to do something." But something tells me there's some serious issues to overcome, and it's not going to happen soon.
Yeah, I interviewed the head of PL marketing last year, or not the head, because the who's in charge rotates, but the person who the guy who operates and manages PL marketing and PL TV, and he said basically, yeah, they'd like to run the whole thing, but they can't call it PL TV when it has. In fact, this is one of the problems. They'd love to keep managing, and have Central League teams join it. They already have the Hanshin Tigers and the Yomiuri Giants.
Right.
Contributing their interleague games to PLTV.
Right.
But the Giants would actually like to be a full-time member of PLTV, but they can't. And they're not going to do it because they can't join something called PLTV. So that's part of the problem. And they can't be NPB TV because some teams don't want to go that way in the Central League. Most notably, the DeNA BayStars, who are run by an internet company and want to do their own thing. They want their own TV. The Giants also have their own TV setup, streaming setup.
And I believe, the BayStars do already have a service.
As you mentioned, every team. Right. Now they're on DAZN, the J League sports format. But basically, as you said, yes, every team owns its home rights, and NPB cannot sell them as a bundle. So that's the fundamental issue. Now, the other thing is MLB.com went. Now, this is what a knowledgeable source has told me. MLB.com went to NPB and said, look, we'll run it for you. We'll do it for you. We'll set it up so you're like us. And what NPB said, no, thank you. We know what we're doing. trust us, we know what we're doing. But I think it was more of a case of, oh, if only we could, but they can't. So again, this is another one of those things that is basically going to, well, again, because it's not just at the rights. It used to be And people have told me the day that Tsuneo Watanabe, the generalissimo of the Yomiuri Giants, who's no longer, who for the about the 10th time is no longer technically in charge, but is undoubtedly still in charge of the Yomiuri Giants, is until he, when he dies, everything will change. But I think now with the BayStars saying, you know, we're not going to wait for him to die, we're going to do our own thing, it's becoming fractured again. But I think there's a negotiation out there sometime when Watanabe dies and the rights are renegotiated, that it will be possible. But so maybe 10 years from now.
Okay. All right. I hope that's a thorough enough answer. And then finally today, and I'm going to try to keep it together while we're doing this. I saved this part for last because I wasn't really sure I could keep it together. And I wasn't really sure I could transition into another topic. After talking about the great Wayne Grassic, as I explained, we lost him officially. I guess it was Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. And he was on a trip in Kumamoto. And I got a call on Thursday morning. And it was all I could do not to fall to the ground. We lost a great friend and a pioneer in Nippon professional baseball, in the community of the media, of just a guy who was a friend to the players, foreign journalism, everything. He was just a great guy. I haven't met anybody who didn't or doesn't like Wayne. And he's the man behind the English Japan Pro Baseball Fan Handbook and Media Guide. He's the guy who greeted a lot of players for 30, 40 years here. You know, there were stories out about how he got his job, and he wrote his bullet in column with the Japan Times. It's just been a really rough week. Jason Koskri, our friend and fellow reporter, probably has been the closest to Wayne among us in the past few years, because they work so much together at Tokyo Dome. And it's hard, you know, I went to Tokyo Dome yesterday and it was just hard. It was very difficult to sit on the bench, to walk around in front of the bench and not look for Wayne. And I just feel awful. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it quickly again. I was starting a newspaper in Nagoya in 1994, and I called Wayne out of the blue and asked him, who can I talk to with the Chunichi Dragons so I can be allowed to do some coverage? And he didn't know me from a hole in the wall, but he tried to help me out as much as he could, gave me a name of a contact he had, and helped get me going. And you know, I ended up here at my current job because he helped me out. And he's always a loved figure in NPB by players, umpires, coaches, guys who are coaches now, managers. Everyone comes up to say hello to him. You know, my only real complaint about the whole situation is the Japanese TV has seemed to do very little about his passing. In fact, all of the media, I really haven't seen much of it anywhere. And that's added disappointment to the sense of the loss that I'm already experiencing. So I just really feel a big gap, a big hole. I'm hurt by that. I'm hoping that Marty Kienert and others can make an effort to get TV, especially Nippon Television, to do something, because he did some great work with them. He did some work with NHK and Kenta Aoshima in the 90s. I'm just hoping he can be honored the way he should have been honored. Jim, you go ahead.
Well, you know, I understand. I also understand that, you know, the English language is such a minority cult. The English language following of Japanese baseball is really a cult kind of thing. We're in that, you know, we're in a niche. And Nippon Television, certainly Wayne was a part of their broadcasts for years and years and years. When I first came to Japan, it was a lifeline for me. You know, there's no internet, 1984, but there was Wayne Grassic and Corky Alexander doing the couple of Giants games every week that I could watch when I got home. My work ended on the weekends usually. I was teaching English, and I'd get home, and on the weekends, I'd get to hear Wayne's nasal voice and Corky Alexander's, really offbeat sense of humor, and Wayne being Mr. Positive all the time, and Corky being Corky. It was just wonderful. It was, even though it was Nippon Television's Giants home game broadcast, and it was very pro Giants, and that was annoying as all heck. But just hearing the English language and hearing the names for the first time, and seeing the players, and reading Wayne's column was so big for me. But what I would say is that Wayne was, and I wrote a bit of this for, and first of all, I would recommend anybody interested to read Jason Koskery's column. He did an obituary, but his column in Friday or Saturday in the Japan Times was just a work of art.
Yeah, both of them were really good. Thank you very much for that, Jason.
Yeah, it was good. And but I would say that Wayne was all about community. He was about building things and working with networking and connecting with people and staying connected and faith in people doing the right thing. If you were connected with baseball, and there's a caveat to that, as Deanna Rubin has pointed out, that Wayne basically told her one day, I took Deanna, and Deanna was a blogger then. She's a wonderful, wonderful writer. And it's a shame that she couldn't get a job writing about baseball, although she's better off financially where she is. But whenever people were writing about baseball, as I started out doing on my own without getting paid, as Michael Westbay started doing when he was doing his baseball blog and his baseball website, as Deanna was doing, Wayne was very suspicious of us. He was, because we were outsiders. Mm-hmm. If you were a baseball person, if you were a scout, if you were a player, if you were a coach, if somebody was paying you to be part of that community, he was your guy. He had your back 100%. If you were a guy who wasn't well defined, if you were a person who was in baseball but sort of like one foot in and one foot out,
mm-hmm.
he didn't know how to deal with it. He couldn't deal. Wayne had. Wayne would call, as Jason wrote, when are you coming to the ballpark? He'd say, what time? I'd say, oh, after 2. What do you mean after 2?
Yeah.
You couldn't say after 2. After 2 was incomprehensible to Wayne. It had to be 2:15. If you said 2:12 and 30 seconds, he'd say, okay, I'll see you then. But Masanori Murakami, former NPB and the first major Japanese major leaguer, said he had heard about it, and he said, Wayne would all. If I wasn't working at the game, if I was just watching, I'd almost always sit with Wayne in the press box, and we'd spend the game watching together. And he'd always ask me, "Are you coming tomorrow? Are you coming to the day after tomorrow?" And he didn't know why. And as Jason wrote, and I knew, it was because he wanted to make sure he had enough donuts for everybody.
Right.
But Wayne was that guy. He was all about, once you were part of that community, then you were somebody whose jobs mattered to him, whose work mattered to him, that it was important for him that you did as well as that you took it seriously and you got it right. If you made a mistake, he was there to tell you, because, he cared about what you were writing about.
Right.
And I'll say it, I've just never met anybody more generous in my life than Wayne Grasek, and we're going to miss you. So I like to think of, I wrote the other day that we could all write a book about all the stories that either Wayne told us, or where we were when we heard Wayne's story, or what we were doing with Wayne when something unusual happened, or he said something that cracked us up, or or we called him out, you know, saying something silly, and we got a good response. And it would be, you know, I'll never forget the time when Wayne and I, and I've heard these from Rob Small, I've heard these from Jason, I've heard them from you, I've got a bunch of them, Marty's got a bunch of them. It's always good stuff, and we are very lucky to have known him.
Definitely. All right, we will leave you with some comments from some of our colleagues and peers and MPB followers. Thanks a lot for listening.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and this is for you, buddy.
We love you, buddy. Enjoy your baseball. Enjoy your baseball, and I'll see you at the park in heaven. This is from Patrick Newman. He says, I didn't know it at the time, but I first heard Wade Grassick's voice in 1994. The MLB players' strike had canceled the World Series, and my local sports cable station showed the Japan Series broadcast by the White Sox announcers and some guy who lived in Japan. So began my fascination with Japanese baseball. Fast forward to 2001, when I was a youthful English teacher working at the Novachane school somewhere near Osaka. Every time a Japan Times would show up in the break room, I would immediately flip to the sports section and read Wayne's Baseball Bulletin column. Life in Japan was still new, and baseball was both comforting in its familiarity and fascinating in its differences. Wayne had a deep understanding of Japanese baseball, and I learned through his work, bit by bit, until I learned Japanese well enough to get by. Fast forward again to 2008 when I started NPBTracker.com. I was working on a blog post that was a collection of links, and I decided to call it NPB Bullet Points as a nod to Wayne's influence on my work. The name stuck, and I wrote dozens, if not hundreds, more posts using that title. I think that Wayne knew that Japanese baseball, like most things, could be enjoyed more thoroughly with a deeper understanding of its culture, nuances, and history. This was certainly reflected in his writing, and I've always tried to carry on the tradition in bringing Japanese baseball to new audiences. My condolences go out to his family, friends, and loved ones. Michael Westbay.
Well, gee, Wayne and I really didn't hit it off very well back when we first met in, I think it was 1996. I was writing on the internet, and he was writing for the Japan Times. But I don't think he quite got the internet yet at that time. Once meeting him in person, though, it quickly became evident that he was really a great guy. He cared about people. And, yes, he cared about Japanese baseball, too. A lot of us bloggers like to think that we've been doing a lot to spread the word about Japanese baseball. But Wayne was the one who had originally gotten it all off the ground. He will be seriously missed.
This is from Jason Coskrey. He says, honestly, I'm devastated, saddened, in shock. You name it. Wayne was always there for me. From the early days when he would read the lineups to me because I couldn't understand kanji, to just last week, he helped give my story an edit. I always told him thanks whenever we parted ways after games, and thank you ended up being my last words to him. I was 24 when I came to Japan, so I still had some growing to do. And I like to think being around Wayne and seeing how he treated people and the respect he was treated with in return left an impression. I was around him basically all the time since I went to so many Giants games early on. He did a lot for me, and I liked hearing his stories about old foreign players, etc. I'll miss him a lot.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudio Rodriguez from BaseballJapones.com. Same as everybody else, I'm absolutely shocked and saddened by the news of Wayne's passing. He was a guide, a mentor, and a role model for all of us. Without his baseball bulletin columns in the Japan Times and his extremely useful media guide, none of us would be here today writing about Japanese baseball. Not only that, but he was such a great guy with so many interesting stories to tell and was always willing to help. He introduced me to Jim and probably to John too, I don't remember. He patiently answered via email every single of my many questions about Japanese baseball when I was starting to write more often about it. Whenever I met him at Tokyo Dome, he would always guide me everywhere and explain me how things work there. And I would always offer me, and he would always offer me something whenever we sat together in the press box, like a donut or a coffee. I always found hilarious the fact that he often mentioned junk food on his columns and would be happy when a new pizza stand or a donut place would open at a stadium or in the city. I always found it fascinating because with so many great food to eat in Japan, how come he was always thinking about donuts and pizza and Wendy's and things like that. But, you know, I've already bought my plane ticket to go to Japan this year, and I was counting on meeting him again at Tokyo Dome, as I've done for the past 10 years. And I'm just, you know, shocked and saddened that I won't be able to do that again. I won't have that chance again. So all I can say is, you know, rest in peace, Wayne, and thank you so very much for all you did for us.